If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times and by David Priest, goalkeeper, scout and columnist. Now, football isn't a Hovis commercial or brass bands and cobblestones. It's harsh, modern and ever-changing. So where does the FA Cup fit into all this? To me, it's an essential part of our sporting heritage. To others, it just gets in the way. Where do you stand, Johnny?
Yeah, look, it's integral to our tradition and our football culture. And the kind of decrying of the FA Cup is similar to the same sort of school that decries football internationals. Oh, you know, why do we have to have a break from the Premier League? Why can't we just, you know, relentlessly keep playing the Premier League all the time? I mean, first of all, there's a world outside the Premier League. Secondly, there's a lovely rhythm to the season, I think, where you know the cup's coming along in January. You know, you've got your international breaks. I think that's what gives it spice. But let's remind us where the games come from. The FA Cup has been, I don't know, for the first 100 years was probably as big, if not a bigger tournament than winning the league title. You know, I remember speaking to some of the guys who were the Leicester Ice Kings, who actually almost won the league in the 60s. And they didn't even know they'd almost won the league, because what they remember is getting to the FA Cup final and not winning it. And that was what they were focused on. That's not ancient history. That's only a couple of generations ago. And the cup, I think, probably needs refreshed, but it certainly doesn't need abolished or anything like that. Mm. And for everyone outside the Premier League, it's magical.
Mm. What did it mean to you as a player, David?
Yeah, I mean, it gave me some of the best and weirdest experiences of my career. I mean,
we like weird.
Well, it was, you know, going to Solihull on a Tuesday night to play a replay, after there'd been accusations of the referee being best mates with Solihull's chairman. And then we had a man sent off in the first 10 minutes. It was 1-1 in extra time. Uriah Rennie played 13 minutes of extra injury time in extra time.
Wow.
And then we won on penalties. I mean, and then...
Okay, how many did you save?
Do you know what? I didn't save any. They missed them. So. But, yeah, after all that. But, and also... I actually take a claim for the start of the Manchester City revolution, because when I was at Darling, we played Manchester City in the FA Cup. I think it was the second round, and Joe Royal was under pressure. I think they're in about 10th, 11th place in what's League One now. And if they'd lost that game, I dare say he would have lost his job, and things could have been a lot different. They could have been stuck in that division. They wouldn't have went up in the playoffs that year. As it was, Paul Dickov equalised in the last few minutes, and they went on to win 1-0 in the replay at Main Road. So Pep Guardiola being at Man City is all down to me.
Slide indoors.
Heard it, yeah.
Jurgen Klopp says, look, I don't have to win a trophy. Now, Liverpool complete the third round on the Monday playing Wolves.
Yeah.
Do you agree with Klopp, or does he really have to? And does something like the FA Cup provide a really good opportunity?
Well, it does. But he has got this historic chance to win the title, and I'd suggest he's probably the police second or third favourites in the Champions League. So it wouldn't be opting out of winning or trying to win if he didn't play a full strength team in the FA Cup. You know, maybe if he was in a different league position, then you'd say, yeah, you've got to try and get them to Wembley. But it would actually be a strategic decision based on trying to win if they prioritised the league. So I don't think it applies to him.
No. I mean, it is different now, though. It's not the same cup final. The cup finals, to me now, are the third, fourth, fifth rounds when you still got the real sort of non-league and League Two clubs still involved with a chance of making a big upset. Because me even getting to Wembley now, it's not the same Wembley as sort of, you know, the Twin Towers. The fact that they changed where the players' entrance from one side of the stadium to down the middle, that long walk from down the tunnel is iconic for the manager. And I can see that if that was the walk that something like Jurgen Klopp made, it does have more sort of, I don't know, a sense of gravitas or just...
No, that was the old stadium. One of my earliest memories is actually going down into the dressing room area there, and you didn't realise that when they walked up to the pitch, they literally walked up to the pitch. Yeah. There was a huge slope. They used to come out of those dressing rooms with those huge, massive baths. Walk up, and as you say, probably, you know, a 100-yard walk by the time they're finished.
Yeah. I played there for the Scottish Press in those dressing rooms. We won, of course, against the English. But there's something about Wembley. It's the biggest pitch in the world. And it probably isn't, but it is, if you know what I mean. I just couldn't believe how vast it was. And that was just before Wembley got redeveloped, and it was you know, inside it was a little bit tatty and run down, but it just still had this different air to it and a pitch that just went on forever.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember Vinnie Jones stalking around there with a beatbox about that size. The sort of romance that you talked about there, David, I suppose, you know, the third round begins on the Friday with Spurs at Tranmere. What type of culture shock awaits them?
I think the atmosphere is created in those stadiums, like Prenton Park now. It's real old-fashioned four stands. And those players are used to hostile crowds, but it is different. You know, it is sort of, I don't know, it takes some getting used to. When you're used to playing these big arenas, that's what you get used to, your perspective in the stadium, whether it's, you know... I think it was Alderweireld, the first couple of times I went to watch him at Wembley. You know, he does that long raking diagonal ball from right to left. He just couldn't get that going for the first few times. Mm-hmm. Right? And it is about being those surroundings, and it will feel claustrophobic to them when they're playing.
And those dressing rooms there at Prenton Park are not expansive, are they? You know,
no, not at all. It was very cosy, you know, when you're getting ready. So it's all different experience for them, and for them to. It disrupts their not usual preparations.
Mm. What are the lessons in a club like Tranmere almost rebuilding itself? You've got Mark Palios, the owner there, former FA chief executive, who is emphasising that we are a community club, we're a community asset. Is that almost part of the blueprint for the future for some of the smaller clubs?
100%. And you know, Tranmere is from, you know, and it's from the Wirral, but it's not the sort of golf courses and champagne bar Wirral. It's Birkenhead. And it's a great football area. It's where Dixie Dean came from. It's very working class. It's a community. It's a big place, big population really, and a community that really needs a football club. And fair play to Mark Palios, who's stuck at it over the last 4 or 5 years. Got in a very good manager in Mickey Mellon, who's particularly good at that level, I think. There's a chance for them to develop some of the great talent that comes out of Merseyside and maybe can't quite get to Liverpool or Everton. The club, I always think of Tranmere almost in tandem with Stockport because of the era when they were both sort of second tier and really good clubs. And it'd be lovely to think Stockport could, because of similar dynamics actually, that they could do something similar to Tranmere. That'd be very good for North West football.
Mm. If we're looking for giant killings, you know, last year we were all taken with Lincoln. Yeah. And the Cowley brothers, you know them pretty well. They're at Everton. We're going to have another helping of shocks.
Well, do you know what? Possibly if it was last year, the year before last, because Lincoln played a certain way to an extreme. Now they've tried to be a little bit more expansive. They've tinkled a little bit with the side. So when you start taking the big boys on at their own game, then invariably you're going to come off second best. But there's a nice little story along with it as well, because actually the South African owner of Lincoln, Clive Nates, his first club is actually Everton. And sort of he got into Lincoln because when he was a, I think he was a kid, I think he might have watched a game at Everton against Lincoln, and he just formed a little sort of affinity with the club. So it's for him it was the dream draw to get that. So it's I hope it's going to be a good Saturday for him.
I suppose it's good also for the Cowleys because they're at actually a crossroads in their career. You go and you see them. You've been in their offices as I have, and you've got the Copa Mundials with the mud still on all over the floor. You've got dirty kit and the toaster in the corner for the morning tea and toast. It's a proper old fashioned football club. They aspire to more. Can they fulfil themselves, those brothers, at a club like Lincoln, or do they need to move on?
Well, they'd need to move on at some point, but you know, they could certainly get Lincoln. If you look at the Burton Albion example, they could do what Nigel Clough's doing at Burton. They could get into that second tier, and they have to develop a bit in terms of their style of football, probably. But in terms of building a football club, building spirit, working out how to win, what they did last year, going up was almost as impressive as a cup run because they had an enormous backlog of fixtures. And someone managed to navigate all of it and didn't let that cup run affect the culture of the place and the dynamic of the club. That's incredible.
Not only that, I mean, they got the semi-final. They only, I think, lost out at the last minute at York for the FA Trophy as well. Yeah. So, I mean, they had a massive season 2 years ago. But it's they've taken the club a long way in a very short space of time, and the funds have been gradually ramped up to meet their demands as well. So, I mean, they're selling out most weeks now. They're getting 9,000-10,000 in the stadium, and you're right. It gets to a certain point where something else is going to happen beyond them as well. You know, the infrastructure around the stadium, and or if they actually move to a new stadium. But at the moment, all their demands are being met, and yeah, Burton's a great example for going into the Championship. But I think that this season's huge. They have to go up this season, and I'd be very surprised if they put much onus on a cup run, really. I know that what they've been able to do since has been off the back of that run because of the money that was created by, I think it was maybe 800,000, £1 million that they created off the cup run last time. So it was, yes, it's been the platform for them to build on now, but the league has got to take priority now.
We're talking about the FA Cup, but we mentioned Burton. Just want to dwell on that for a second. Mm. Getting to the semi-finals of the League Cup—that is some achievement.
It's astonishing. Just when you thought there was nothing more that Nigel Clough could do with Burton, he pulls this one out of the bag. Winning at Middlesbrough—they not easy at all. Just sustaining it year after year—it's great. I mean, in a way, it's a shame they play Manchester City because there's zero chance of a shock, but then in a way it's also the best possible story because, you know, they will get Manchester City at their own ground and the experience and all that entails. And, you know, someone like Phil Foden might have one of his formative experiences at Burton, which is delicious. It's great.
You said you were at Leicester.
Yeah.
Did Leicester miss a trick by not picking their strongest team against City in that previous round in the League Cup?
They did. I mean, I was there as a fan, actually, with my daughter. And there was a big sense of disappointment about not getting through because there was an opportunity. City had some talented players on the pitch, but, you know, a defender making his debut and some youngsters. And really, it was set up for an old-style Leicester night. And it's the fact that exactly the same thing happened the year before. Penalties, Man City. Puel didn't play his strongest team then. He didn't play his strongest team. There was a debate about he should have played Vardy. I mean, I actually think that was a red herring because Vardy's not had the greatest season. But he certainly should have played Madison. He certainly should have played Albrighton. It was probably Chilwell. And it's a shame. Don't be too harsh on Leicester, on anyone, because what's happened to the club this year, and it's in special circumstances. But in this instance, it was repeating last year's mistake.
Mm. When we look around, we talked about that tie probably being decided by a selection decision.
Yeah.
There are going to be a lot of selection decisions in the third round of the FA Cup. by managers. So does that give give us a little bit more chance of an upset? So I'm thinking of something like if Chelsea put a, you know, put a few, you know, Hudson-Odoi and one or two others, Loftus-Cheek in there, and they come up against a vibrant, committed, young and ambitious team like Nottingham Forest. Is that the sort of thing that can happen? Bearing in mind that Chelsea obviously are the holders.
Well, it should be, it should give teams more of a chance to get further in the competition. But at the same time, it still takes a little bit away from it. You know, a full strength Manchester United side being beaten is obviously a bigger feat than if you're playing against their reserves. So it's, even as a player, it would sort of take the shine off of a giant killing, but that's the way we are now. It's not even Premier League clubs that are just that are resting players as Championship clubs as well. So it's, I like to think that because it gives it the smaller clubs a more of a chance, and it can be a positive.
Yeah, well, one of my great memories was the, you know, Bradford winning at Stamford Bridge. Yeah, I was at that game, and it was just like, that to me sort of summed up the joy of football, the complete unpredictability. Everyone went there thinking, oh, well, here we go, you know, it's going to be 3-0, 3-1 maybe, and bang, the whole world turned that side down. It's great.
Yeah, nobody saw that one coming. Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah. Coventry at United a few years back, I remember that. I mean, that you know, the, as a Scot, you always remember Hamilton beating Rangers. You go back to that with Jimmy Greaves on ITV sort of talking about Hamilton Accies for about a year after that. And you don't get so many shocks in Scotland. But yeah, it's hard to know what is a shock these days. Mm.
Yeah. Would Derby beating Southampton count as a shock?
Nah, not. I mean, yes, obviously it would on paper. But Derby are a very, very good football side, and Southampton are struggling. New manager, that wouldn't be too huge a shock. The one I'm looking at actually is Fulham v Oldham, simply because I think Ranieri is a very wily old character and just won't want a cup run at all, and that'd be a small club going away to a bigger one. And if I did bet, I'd fancy just a little bit of money on there, because I could see Claudio opting out of the competition.
Yeah, a manager once told me. Yeah, he said there is such a thing as a convenient defeat.
Yeah, Sam did it at West Ham, didn't he, when he put in a bunch of children and got hammered and
Forest
shamelessly. And the fans didn't forgive him for it, but it was strategic and he kept them up.
Yeah, I suppose if we're looking also Bristol City to beat Huddersfield, I suppose Huddersfield are a very similar position, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that Bristol City have been a decent cup side last couple of seasons. Obviously, got the semi-finals last year against Manchester City. Manchester City getting the good draw again, the semi-final. it's been a funny year for Lee Johnson as well, you know, because I think they started off on fire last year, and I think that was probably it was a bit of a distraction to them. You know, they went on to, I think they beat sort of Watford, Palace, Man United, and face Man City, you know, so it's, they're capable of lifting it against the big sides.
With West Ham, there was a revival of mood pre-Christmas. They've got a really tricky tie against Birmingham, haven't they?
Yeah, they do. That's almost a historic rivalry in a way from Championship days. Might need to be an extra police presence to that one, I'd suggest. But it's tough, you know. It's a fighting team with a Gary Monk manager who knows what it's going to be about. But again, Pellegrini he did well in the cups at City. He respected them. They were important for him. I think he could also select from a pretty big squad. Yeah, I think West Ham might be all right at the moment in that one.
Mm. One of the features of them over the last couple of months has been Declan Rice. Mm. He does look a pretty special player in the making. Not signed a new contract. You'd imagine that he might be out of dodge by the summer?
Well, you think so, and I think he's probably looking from his perspective, it looks like a wise decision not to commit himself to Ireland as well. Whether that'll be a wise decision, we'll see in the future. But it certainly looks one that I think that Gareth Southgate will probably look at in the near future as well. But it's what West Ham are built on, really, isn't it? It's bringing players through like that, and the West Ham probably supporters need a few more of those to come through.
Mm-hmm. What about someone like Sheffield United as a cup sign, mm. they are manic, aren't they, at times? A bit like their manager to a degree.
Yeah.
And they've got Barnett. It's good to see Barnett back. And they, one would imagine, will get a few quid out of it.
Yeah, and they've got that sort of cup tradition, which sort of, for some reason...
Haven't got the slope anymore, though.
Haven't got the, I mean, it's funny. For some reason, that does seem to influence down the generations. It's how much, again, it's how much they want to put into it. I'd see them beating Barnet, but it's how much they want to put into it, given it's probably time for Wilder to get them out of the Championship. You know, he's had that sort of span. But they would not be a pleasant experience for... If they did take it sort of seriously, they wouldn't be a pleasant experience for any bigger club going there.
Mm, and, you know, across the city, you look at Sheffield Wednesday, they're in turmoil. You've got the owner basically having a row with supporters for 4 hours, and at the end of it saying, that's it, I'm out of here, I'm going to sell the club. Mm. You know, they really do look vulnerable to Luton.
Yeah, I mean, Nathan George is doing a great job at Luton. I mean, similar to, the Cowley brothers, you know, he's just produced sort of a good side and then sort of built on it with each year. Second place in League One at the moment, flying high. And even last year, I think, did they go up to St James's last year? And they didn't start the game really well. And I think ended up getting beat. Went 3-0 down, I think, and then took the 3-2. So I think it's, again, I mean, it just depends on these sides at the top of each division, what they put their priorities on. And I think if he makes a few changes, then could that detract from his chances of getting Sheffield Wednesday? But I think sometimes it's a great chance to go somewhere like Hillsborough and really sort of put the foot on them, like, you know.
Yeah, is that the sort of result that could cost the manager a job?
Yeah, it's pretty febrile at Wednesday, and I don't think Leeds' success helps the situation. They sort of, that's one of the, I guess, reference points for that club, is how Leeds are doing. Sheffield United have had a reasonable era. Huddersfield are up. I know there's discontent among the Wednesday fans. There's been all this, various things have been tried. They think the recruitment hasn't been any good. They're struggling to see a pattern to it. It always looked like a slightly left field appointment. And they just seem to, you know, it's a club I kind of do vaguely follow in terms of results, and they just seem to have runs and then great big troughs and runs and troughs, and it's been like that for a few years. And they might, if Leeds get up, they might then become the next big club that needs sorting out, if you know what I mean.
Mm. But because Sheffield is a great football city, isn't it? I can remember watching the derby earlier in the season, and it was Keystone Kops speed, wasn't it? It was mad.
Yeah.
Mm. The fans are into it. And again, a bit of a throwback experience.
Yeah, I spoke to Nigel Pearson recently, funnily enough, and he was talking about how Eric Cantona had that trial at Wednesday and nearly, very, very nearly signed for them, and Trevor Francis decided against it because it was snowing at the time and he didn't have a chance to see him playing an outdoor game. But Nigel was reminding me that Sheffield Wednesday were third that year and were right in the mix at that point, and possibly could have won the league, because obviously he went to Leeds, who were in a similar position, and he just gave them that extra jump and they won the title. And a lot of the recent history of, recent 50, 60 years of Sheffield has been what-ifs and close-run things.
Mm. Let's stay in Yorkshire if we could. Barnsley, they're at Burnley, who probably don't need a cut run, let's be honest. There's an almost forgotten German coach at Barnsley, Daniel Stendel. What do you know of him?
Well, I mean, I know that he's sort of came through the ranks at Hanover, sort of through the youth teams and the first team coach there. And he spent sort of a year, 14 months out of football before he got the Barnsley job. And it's, everything was new with Barnsley, so new owners, obviously new coaching staff. So it was there was a lot of things for everyone to get used to. But he's done a very good job very quickly. Okay, the results have tailed off a little bit in recent weeks, but the in and around where they should be for a club with their budget. But he's given them a bit of a bit of a change of identity. You know, under Paul Heckenbottom, they had a certain way of playing. You know, he modelled his style on kind of like a Simeone, sort of a cup price Simeone type thing. And but it's a little bit more front foot with Stendhal. And on the flip side of it, with the recruitment that recruitment staff, and they've had in the background, not just over the last couple of seasons, but sort of four or five. They bring these young players in out of sort of lower leagues and non-league, and we spoke about young Pinnock, the central defender.
A lot of people are watching him.
Yeah, they got him from Dulwich Hamlet, and he's performed really well. He's slotted straight in there, and no problem. And it's the likes of him that you know that they're going to rely on, because I think they've heavily relied on the loan market in the past. Certainly under Paul Heckenbottom, they did that. And it was always a rebuilding process every year, because those players would go back to their parent clubs. Now that they've got more of a solid side, and they became a little bit more of a selling club simply because they needed to do that. Now they've got the financial backing. There's not such a rush to get rid of those players. They hang on them for 1 or 2 years longer to give them a bit more success.
Yeah, I suppose also, you know, there is a personal dimension to any football story. Mm. And with Stendhal, what struck me is, you know, he's left his family behind with two young kids, and it's almost that sacrifice for the opportunity. It's a big thing to do, isn't it?
Huge thing to do. It's funny, maybe in the same way that young English players are going to Germany, this is the land of opportunity for young German coaches now. You know, this is the time for them, because Germany is so in German coaching ideas. And he's had a strange career. I don't know much about him personally, but just analysing it by just looking at the CV, he did pretty well at Hanover, having, you know, come through as youth coach and then did very well with the first team, and they got rid of him very quickly. So I don't know what went wrong there, and then for him to be out of the game for
don't know the politics of the club, do you?
Don't know exactly, and then for him to not get another job in Germany, given what he'd already done, is odd. But he could be another Wagner and a Farke. That's what they'll be hoping. Someone that's been inured in the youth side of the game in Germany and then coming here. But, you know, I don't know, could be another, another of they had Jose Moraes before, didn't they? Could be another experiment that doesn't quite work for them.
Mm, yeah, but I suppose if they win at a Premier League club, that's good for the CV. Is that likely to happen at Turf Moor?
Like you said, maybe it's a cup run, something that Sean Dyche could do without. But I don't know. They went out to Lincoln a couple of years ago, and it's for a fan's perspective, it's probably never a good thing to be going out to a low league club, sort of two divisions below. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. They've got a good chance, I think, Barnsley.
Mm. Woking and Watford. Mm. Again, that's one, isn't it? It's a bit of a throwback tie.
It's a great tie, and there's a chance there, because again, is Gracia really going to put a lot into the FA Cup? Watford are a team that, you know, they can be pretty poor on their day as well as great. So there's a chance there. I mean, what Woking are they the smallest team left in the competition?
Yeah.
They must be near there or thereabouts. That's a chance for them to, you know, sustain their financial future. Martin Tyler, assistant manager, you tell me, Mike.
Mm, yeah.
Which, yeah. You know, when are you going to get a club?
I don't think I'm up to that level. Anyway, you know, Martin's got a few more years even than me, so I've got a long time to catch up. I think Watford is an interesting one. You know, it's a club that I grew up with, and you know, the first time I fell in love with football was literally when they beat Bill Shankly's first ever team in 1970. That's prehistory, kids. And you know, that I saw then, that day, an entire community energised by one football club and a result and a headed goal by a guy called Barry Endy. And that's what the FA Cup is all about to me. And I still think in that Woking Watford game, you might not get it from the Watford fans to a degree, but certainly, if you're a Woking supporter and you're one of, I don't know, 400 or 500 or whatever it is, this is your day.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's being shown on BT Sport, but it should be. Because, you know, we talk about Spurs going to Tranmere. Prenton Park's quite a nice stadium. Yeah. It's old-fashioned, but it's nice. walking on the other hand. I mean, they'll be able to see when, you know, how long's left on the clock, because it's about 5 metres at the top of the stand on the far side, because it's just standing room on one side. Mm-hmm. They might have to look beyond the sort of the scaffold and where the guy's filming the game from, you know. So it's, it'd be a real culture shock for them. And I'd imagine they'd make a lot of changes, Watford, but whoever goes out there, you know, they won't enjoy playing there and all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other result I'm going to look out for is Accrington, Stanley and Ipswich. Mm. You know, they began brilliantly. They've leveled off a bit. Again, that's a proper football club run for the community.
Yeah, yeah. Great. And it's just in that heartland of, you know, it's almost like football was mined from the hillsides of the northwest in that kind of area, and it's brilliant going to Accrington, absolutely brilliant. You know, got a very good, very sort of funny manager, done so well at that.
1,000 games John Coleman's done.
Incredible, yeah, and a guy that just knows the, you know, he just knows his stuff, and he's quite, you know, he's still ambitious. He's got quite a sort of edge to him as well. It reminds me a bit of Keith Hill, I don't know, something like that, but. It's a great tie, and Accrington is you know, as you say, Mike, it does what it should be doing for that community. There's some fairly deprived, sort of those old mill towns around Manchester, are you know, economic problems, and it's that's what football clubs should be doing. It should be a focus for a town like that and help regenerate it and keep it on the map.
A lot of clubs in the Premier League and Championship will sort of rub their hands at getting lower league opposition, but when the way Ipswich are at the moment, the way they're playing at the moment, you know, they'll have groaned when they've got Accrington, because they'll know that it's a tough game for them.
Mm-hmm. You've got Paul Lambert trying to revive his career there. It's a difficult club to take over.
It is. I mean, we talk about sort of the gradual decline of sort of United and how things have changed with each transfer window. Even we talk about Lincoln's run, when they beat Ipswich 2 years ago, that didn't look like a Championship side to me. They didn't make many changes, and they weren't playing with any confidence, and it's just gradually got worse, obviously. And I think that, we talk about somebody going at Manchester United, it took Sir Alex Ferguson about 5-6 years to get to win the title at United and to change things around. Paul Lambert's going to need, he maybe won't get 6 years, but he's certainly going to need a long time to change, not just change the playing staff, but change the culture of losing, which often seeps into clubs. Like, you know, it's happened at Sunderland for a few seasons, that's been changed around now. Mm. So it takes more than just changing personnel.
Mm, yeah, you mentioned Man United. Mm. Lest we forget, which we have, you know, they were beaten finalists last season.
Yeah.
Is this competition their best chance of redemption this season?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can't see the Champions League fairy tale being there for them. And would it be redemption to finish sixth, or you know, even fourth for Man United? But you know, Solskjaer's got a great cup record as a player, obviously. We remember 99. It could just be that. If he can bring in the sort of fun, if he can bring in just a sense of the old Manchester United, then it just could be something to rally around, a good FA Cup campaign. And what would be redemptive, I suppose, is that, you know, you trace Jose Mourinho's decline back to that FA Cup final, where a man who sets everything up to be about results, a miserable season, I think, I know they finished second, but miserable season watching them. That was a chance to get the trophy and to tell everyone how well he'd done again. And they played with such cowardice against Chelsea. It was so negative in the final. It was a really negative game between two kind of miserable teams. And Mourinho was in a foul mood afterwards, and that carried on into the summer. And the rest is history. So for United, it would be, you know, the story arc would be quite good for them to win at Wembley.
And that story also includes, if we, you know, again, we probably forget, Louis van Gaal won the FA Cup and basically turned up at the press conference to be told, see you later.
Yeah, it just proved it didn't save anybody the job. But it's the real danger United have got now is the fact that all those players that have contributed to their failure recently have kind of been absolved of it, because the finger could be pointed at Mourinho and say, well, he's lost his job, so it must have been his fault. So whether they think they can, they have to sort of lift their efforts or not, or think it's, well, it's only down to him. That's the danger they're looking at now.
So, okay, I'll put you on the spot yet again then. Yeah. Who's going to win it?
I've got a wee fancy for Arsenal, actually. I'm really impressed with Emery. They've got something going. They've hit really great heights on their day. And a cup manager, great cup record in Seville, so quite fancy them.
Yeah, maybe. Do you know what? I'm going to go for Spurs, simply because I know they're involved in, there'll be four competitions sort of by the time they get their FA Cup, but I really think that sometimes with cup competitions, the sort of, you know, if you do well in one cup, you do well in another cup, so I quite fancy Spurs.
Well, here's one for you. How about Newcastle? A tricky tie against Blackburn in the third round, but if they win at Wembley in May, Rafa will be canonised. Lovely. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.